This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is sponsored by the Education and Outreach Team for the Messenger Mission to Planet Mercury. Follow the mission as the spacecraft helps to unlock the secrets of the inner solar system at www.messenger-education.org.
It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, coming in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon from the American Association for the Advancement of Science. You may know me from roles in such radio shows as Science Update, Kinetic City Supercrew, and as Bob the Science Slob on the Absolutely Mindy Show on Sirius XM Radio's Kids Place Live. Or maybe not. If matter were musical notes, the surface of the planet Mercury, or any other solid planet, would sound something like this. The exosphere, on the other hand, would sound more like this. Ron Verbach, senior research scientist at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory, says that sometimes it's a big advantage to be able to examine atoms in isolation instead of all bunched together. And he says that the atoms in Mercury's exosphere are so sparse that even if you gathered them all up, you could pack them and ship them via standard UPS ground delivery.
We've often talked about as a team making an estimate of, okay, so if we took all the atoms that were currently in the exosphere and shoved them into a box, how big would the box be? Would it be the size of a refrigerator? Would it be the size of a truck? We're not talking things that are probably much bigger than something of that scale. It's if you compress it down to the type of density we have at our surface. So it's not a lot of material, but it's very informative.
Verbach is on the science team of the Messenger mission to planet Mercury. The Messenger spacecraft is now in orbit around Mercury and has several instruments designed to examine and analyze the planet's surface. Verbach says that surprisingly, looking at what's going on hundreds of kilometers above the surface can make that job easier.
All the material in the exosphere has its ultimate origin on the surface of the planet. So you're going to learn something about the composition of the surface. We look at what are known as emission lines. So the atoms give off light at a particular wavelength. It's a very diagnostic wavelength. We know exactly what species things are coming from. So we can learn about the composition of the surface by what's coming off of it. And in some ways, this is extremely complementary to what you get from the surface instruments, because they can tell sometimes that it might be this or that and can't distinguish against it. We might be able to provide a clue on that.
Not only can this tell you something about the composition of the surface, but also a lot about what processes are going on there. Verbach says the exosphere is in constant flux, with some atoms getting added from the surface, others leaking out into space, and still others carried back to the surface.
The exosphere has to constantly be replenished. When stuff comes off, it either falls back or escapes from the system, and that happens on the time period of minutes to days. So if we weren't constantly regenerating the exosphere, it would just go away. So you really want to understand how it's regenerating.
Atoms are sent up to the exosphere in three primary ways. One is from sunlight hitting the surface. Photons either warm the materials up and boil them off or break the bonds of loosely held atoms. Verbach says interactions with sunlight are known as cool processes.
They take very low energy, and so they'll affect certain species more than they will others. One species in particular that'll affect is sodium, which is the same sodium that you see in the sodium vapor lamps on Earth, that nice kind of amber yellowish color. That's the emission line that we're seeing at Mercury. And it's the strongest emission at Mercury by far.
The other two interactions are called hot or high energy processes. They include charged particles hitting the surface and also micrometeoroid impacts.
Tiny, tiny little dust particles, not big things. And just they constantly are hitting the surface and knocking material off. Also, charged particles, either coming in from the sun in the solar wind or from the magnetosphere itself. Mercury has this very vigorous and dynamic magnetosphere that sends particles back to the surface. Those can get in to the surface, break bonds, and these are both energetic processes, so they'll launch material to much higher altitudes. And they, we thought, were the primary sources of calcium and magnesium, which are the other two really easily seen emission lines that we study on a regular basis.
But in one of many mysteries that Mercury has served up, that hasn't been the case.
If you think going in that it's meteoroid impacts, the dust in the inner solar system hitting the surface and knocking stuff off, or if it's the charged particles from the sun and the magnetosphere knocking stuff off, you would expect to see certain, you know, uniformity or particular places where the charged particles come in, sort of like the what are known as the magnetospheric cusps, the equivalent on Mercury of where aurora would be on Earth. It's a totally different process, but you have aurora at northern latitudes, southern latitudes. You would expect to see similar types of enhancement. We didn't see that. What we saw in calcium in the flybys, and we continue to see it all the time in orbit, is that calcium seems to be coming off of the surface near the dawn terminator, so basically in the early morning. That's where the calcium density in the exosphere is the highest. And that's surprising because there's no reason to expect an energetic process to be so focused at the terminator like that. So that was our first surprise. It's like, wow, so that's not behaving.
Just as weird is that magnesium, which normally would follow calcium, isn't pairing up with calcium at the dawn terminator. It's sort of doing its own thing.
Calcium and magnesium were thought to be very similar in terms of the ways they would be knocked off the surface. Clearly, something's affecting calcium and not affecting magnesium in the same way. Then more recently, we just discovered that magnesium has a different behavior than we expected. It's showing some enhancements at different portions of the exosphere, different so-called local times, where local time is basically 6 in the morning, 8 in the morning, noon, and we're seeing enhancements at different local times.
You might think all these misbehaving elements would be disconcerting to Vervaak and his colleagues, and you'd be right. But it's also kind of exciting.
Well, one of the things that we may learn from all of this unusual behavior in the exosphere is it may point to processes that are new. And the wonderful thing about Mercury is it's really a nice laboratory. You know, you have this rocky surface with a very vigorous and dynamic magnetosphere because it's so close to the sun and interacts so strongly with the solar wind. So we're learning things about magnetospheric processes that are new. Even though we've had a lot of magnetospheric spacecraft at Earth studying our magnetosphere, it's very different at Mercury, so they're learning things. In turn, that leads to models of how the charged particles come down to the surface, which may, you know, they may tell us something about what we're seeing. So we're learning about these processes we already know are there, but we're learning new things about the way they work. That's one thing. And you can take that to any planet that has a magnetosphere and say, okay, so maybe this explains something at Jupiter that we didn't understand before. So in that sense, it's kind of nice. It informs things other than just studying Mercury for Mercury's sake. And again, it may uncover a new process that we didn't think was important at all. That's always exciting because it's like, hey, we never even considered this, and there it is.
Or maybe there are no new processes going on, just strange concentrations of elements on the surface. And that also would be interesting. You may recall that in an earlier podcast, I reported on the discovery of hollows on Mercury, strange patterns of pits where it looks like something boiled or evaporated away. Maybe the anomalous behavior in the exosphere is a clue.
We may find that perhaps this is material that's in the hollows that the geologists talk about. We don't know that. We haven't seen those kind of tight correlations with the features. That's something we're hoping to do in the future. But if it is something like that, then it points to, okay, you know, these are magnesium rich, or if in the case of calcium over on the Dawn side, you know, these are calcium rich things. They may not be able to figure that out other than from the information we can provide. So we may learn something about very localized material on Mercury, which can then point to something about how those particular materials came to be in place, whether it's volcanism or some other process. So everything's tied together. The space environment could be influencing us. It almost certainly is, but it could be influencing us in ways we don't understand. That could point to ways that the surface itself is chemically arranged. And that can point to the geology people who can then take that and run with it in terms of how Mercury came to be in its present state on the surface. So there's a lot of feedback. That's what's so nice about the Messenger mission, is that all the teams really have to talk to one another to try and put the big picture together.
So there you have it. The incredibly high proportion of information per unit mass of Mercury's exosphere. If you have questions, comments, observations, anecdotes, jokes, rants, witticisms, poems, songs, secret messages, haiku, anagrams, opinions, suggestions, or anything else you'd like to share, please click the comment box. Thanks for listening. For the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, I'm Bob Hirshon.
This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is sponsored by itelescope.net, expanding your horizons in astronomy today. The premier on-demand telescope network at dark sky sites in Spain, New Mexico, and Siding Spring, Australia.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. Cool.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.